Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
Good evening and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Spick. A day after, actually by the time you listen to this, 2 days after, the Raiders with a resounding victory over the Denver Broncos 37-12. The Silver and Black are now 6-3. It is weird to see them that many games over 500, and it is a beautiful sight. Also a great sight. You know him, you love him, he's the man with the expert breakdowns on Twitter, friend of mine, Ryan Holmes. Good evening, Ryan. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I am excellent. Now, let's get into it. Just random question. Just before we break down it, before we break this down unit by unit, did you enter the game thinking that Drew Lock was going to be this bad?
No, I didn't. I thought, you know, there was a chance. I mentioned last week he's the type of guy that can go three touchdowns or three interceptions, and we actually saw the four interceptions this week. But I've watched a couple of Broncos games this year, and I was not expecting him to be that bad. And I know he doesn't handle the blitz very well, and I was surprised to see how many blitzes Gunther brought. But, no, I didn't think he'd be that bad with the weapons that he had.
Because I was expecting a little closer. Actually, part of me thought that we could possibly have a shootout. Well, one team arrived armed, and the other team arrived kind of with their hands empty. So we're going to dive into it. What were your two overarching or biggest takeaways you had from the performance?
Number one, the Raiders have different ways to win. They can get into shootouts. They can fight you in a phone booth. We saw them do it in weather in Cleveland. They've done it on the road. So that's the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway is they can win in various styles. The defense has come around the last 3 weeks. I'll give Gunther a little bit of credit. I know we've talked a lot about him on this podcast, but, you know, it's big to see that they can handle different styles, and they're going to need that. There's going to be games where they're going to put up 35, 40 points and air it out. There's games where they're going to have to slow it down, control the clock. They've done that a couple of weeks in a row. And the other thing was the defense. You know, that was another – a big change, that the number of zone blitzes, and Gunther just kept dialing them up and forced turnovers. I haven't seen that all year. You know, he'll bring a couple, but not the number that he brought against Drew Lock. And I know Lock is the worst in the NFL as far as quarterback rating against the blitz, but I'm glad to see that they saw that and they actually built a game plan around it. So that was exciting to watch.
Now, when you look at the Raiders during this hot streak, before we dive, do you think this win streak is more of a product of adjustments and Gruden implementing his will as far as a game plan or the quality or lack thereof of opponent?
I think it has more to say about Gruden and the game planning, especially in offense, just with the different personnel groupings he's run out there, all the injuries they've had on the offensive line, and all the different schemes that they're using to run the ball. And there was a couple of wrinkles we can get into later that they mixed into some of their zone concepts that I hadn't seen on film, and it gave the Broncos a lot of problems. And they just kept running the same play over and over and over again, and the Broncos couldn't stop it. And just small wrinkles here and there that Gruden's put in, and that he's taking advantage of tendencies of other defenses, that's good to see. Defensively, I think the jury's still out. It was a great step forward with the 5 turnovers, but let's see what they can do against Kansas City this upcoming week.
Now, you look at the offense and you look at Derek Carr. He continues to win without the gaudy stats. He continues to thrive without the eye-popping numbers. He was 16-25 for 154 yards. Wasn't sacked. No picks. No touchdowns. What have you seen as far as Carr doing his win streak that has impressed you most? And what impressed you versus the Broncos?
I think I'm impressed with the way that he's not turned the ball over given the state of the offensive line and pass protecting, and just being able to move the ball. Like you said, he didn't have any touchdowns this week, but he had 3 or 4 that were on the guy's hands that got dropped. So he could have easily thrown for 250 and 3 or 4 touchdowns. Had a couple of guys held on to some balls, but, you know, not forcing stuff. You know, there was the fumble before the half last week, but, you know, taking care of the ball, keep the chains moving, keep the defense off the field, and just his willingness to compete and go for it when he needs to run it. He's pulled the ball down in the last 3 or 4 games and taken off several times per game, and we haven't seen that in 4 years.
And I always look, it's funny, I always look back to his combine and realize that just whatever folks take for the combine, he tested extremely well. And people forget he is a very good athlete, not just somebody who can throw the ball, but he is mobile and uses his legs well. He is, and people also forget, he's not a little quarterback. He's not a giant. He's not like a Justin Herbert, but he's not Kyler Murray either. So he definitely has shown the ability to use his legs more often. Speaking of using legs, the backfield, it continues to be one of the strengths. They combined for 193 yards and 4 touchdowns, also 37 carries. When you look at Josh Jacobs, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago, we have both said that he looked a little tired, but now he seems to have his burst back. I think it's the increased workload of Devontae Booker. What do you see Jacobs in this game? Was there a particular run that he had that spoke to you like he's going to be a handful down the stretch for teams?
There was a run early in the second half. He got 11 yards on a power play to the left side. He kind of got in the hole, made a guy miss with shiftiness, and ran over a safety. And you kind of saw a little bit of that wiggle you saw last year in finishing with power. And I kind of went back and watched that play a couple of times because I just hadn't seen some of that since. It reminded me a little bit of the Green Bay game last year. We had 3 or 4 of those kind of runs where he got in the hole, and then he shot out the back door, and then he was gone. There was a couple cutback runs. Got a 23-yarder where he cut it back to the left. And his vision was really good in this game. He had a lot of plays where he bent the play back to the backside. And, you know, Brandon Parker and Good had nice blocks. The receivers were getting in there. So it was good to see the vision and then the power and the burst. And, yeah, I think it could have been a hip injury. It could have been a knee. There was something going on there. He was tired. He was carrying the ball 27 times, 31 times, 30 times. And it was good to see him get a break and to see Booker get 16 carries this week too. And once they had the lead, they didn't count on Jacobs to get 8, 9, 10 carries in the fourth quarter and finish it out. They put him on the sideline and they let Booker close it.
I know in the past I have ripped John Gruden for his horsing of running backs and the fear that he would do the same to Jacobs. During his win streak, he has shown the ability to actually split carries and actually divide them, if not equally, being more fair to Josh Jacobs, who's still relatively young at 21, 22. He's still a young back, but you don't want to put all those miles on him super early. Where when Josh Jacobs was at Alabama, he had fewer carries. I want to say he had less than 300 career carries, but if you flip it the other way, you had somebody like, this is a name out of the past that people might not remember, but Kevin Smith out of Central Florida, who had 400 carries in a year in college. So it's one of those things that coming into the league, you want to make sure you keep your back fresh. Now, if we move on to Darren Waller, I don't know what it is about Waller at times. Is it concentration with the drops? Is it just not used to having like 2 years of high volume targets, or just something where he drops passes that he should be able to easily secure, but then he'll make a great catch on a contested ball? What do you think the disconnect is for him?
Yeah, this week he had a bad one. It would have been probably a 60-yard touchdown on a quick out and up on a vertical route. He had separation behind the corner, and he just took his eyes off it and dropped it. It was good to see Derek come back a couple of plays later on third down to him for, you know, 20, 23 yards over the middle. But, yeah, the drops are every week there seems to be one, and it's starting to pile. It's 1 week, then it's 2, then it's 3, and now I would say this year he probably has 4 or 5 drops on the season, and that was a big one. And unfortunately, a couple other receivers had drops too, and it didn't come back to hurt him. But I don't know. There's something going on there as far as, you know, concentration. I don't know what it is. They didn't use him much as a blocker this week. There was a lot of Witten, a lot of Moreau, so he was running a lot of routes split out. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but there's something going on there. It might just be concentration, and hopefully this week that he hauls those in and they're touchdowns.
Speaking of drops, Henry Ruggs, who hasn't been targeted often, he was targeted 4 times in the game. He had one. He had a drop there. Now, with him, I think it's different than Waller because he may not see as many targets, but if you spin it forward, do you think that Carr will keep looking towards Ruggs to try to build that connection, or do you think the drops or the fact that sometimes Ruggs disappears will play a factor down the stretch?
No, I think he's going to start looking for him. There's on that particular play that you're talking about, I think Ruggs picked it up late. He just didn't see it and got on him quick. Derek usually puts air under it. He put that one on kind of a rope. Aguilar was actually wide open on that same play, working underneath Ruggs towards the sideline or kind of a sail route, and Derek tried to get the ball in there to Ruggs. And I think Derek knows he needs him, and he's going to keep leaning on him. There were times in the game where Ruggs was open on certain routes and Derek didn't look his way, and he's going to have to earn that trust. Hopefully after that first Kansas City game where Ruggs went down the slot and went up and made that play, I thought Derek was going to trust him a little bit more, but there's something there. They're not on the same page. I don't know if it's something that's going on in practice where Derek just doesn't trust him, but you've seen Derek do that with certain wide receivers, and he had immense trust in Michael Crabtree, and he didn't like to go to Amari Cooper in certain situations. So I think Ruggs is just going to have to keep working at it, and it's something they're going to have to build on. And down the stretch of the season, there's going to be games where he's going to get targeted 6, 7, 8 times, and he's going to have to make the most of them. He's also going to have games where he's getting targeted 3 or 4 times, like we've seen when the running game is turning out 200 yards a game.
Now, during the week before the game, John Gruden was overly complimentary of Jerry Jeudy as far as his ability to pick up something and run routes the way you want them to run as a coach. Do you think that was just him complimenting an opponent, or do you think that was a veiled shot at Ruggs?
I think he was just complimenting Jeudy, and that was the thing on Jeudy coming out of the draft, that he was a polished route runner, and then Gruden was just stating the obvious. I don't think it was a shot at Ruggs.
I don't think so either, because I think that John Gruden is smart enough, and he is smart to know that if you pick a guy 11th, you want him to be an integral part of your team, and you're not going to be out there throwing little side shade to try to either needle him or motivate him. When we come back from break, I want to discuss a couple of the other receivers, and I want to discuss, I never thought I'd say this out loud, the stellar play of Brandon Parker. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, now, people will sit there and discuss, we have discussed Ruggs, but how good was it to see, even though he only had one catch, Bryan Edwards just back on the field and making a play?
It was great to see because they're going to need him down the stretch, too. He's the big physical X receiver they don't have on the roster when they don't have Waller split out wide. So they're going to need Edwards down the stretch. It was good to see him involved. He played a number of snaps this week after playing one last week and caught the one ball for about 15 yards there on the left sideline. But, no, it's good to see him out there running around. He's physical in the running game. He can bring so many different elements to this offense, whether it's the red zone, crack toss might be back in the playbook, work in the middle of the field. He was open on a crossing route on the third down where Carr got pressured and had to bail out, or he could have had another big catch there. But, no, it was good. It's good to see Edwards out there running around looking healthy.
Now, we saw Brennan Parker, you know, stand there and have a damn good game versus Bradley Chubb. Brennan Parker was a guy that all of us thought that, I'm not going to speak to anybody else, but I thought that they made him a reach in the third round because he hadn't shown anything of any positive note until this season. And got to credit Tom Cable. Brennan Parker played well again. What did you see that stuck out or stood out to you most about Parker's play during the game on Sunday?
The thing that stood out the most was the pass protection. He looks so much more comfortable on the left side than the right side, and it's all with his he's got good feet. It's the kick step and getting in a good, you know, two or three steps back to where he can block and he can make that outside rusher run the corner, run the hump, and not get into his body. He still had some trouble with some power and some inside moves, but he showed the feet to get out and make the defensive end have to work all the way around him and give Carr time. And his length can push that guy even wider. There was a couple of reps where I watched it again. I'm like, just watching his feet. You didn't see that on the right side. I don't know if he's uncomfortable because he's a left tackle in college, but he looks like he can be a swing backup left tackle. He had a couple of good double team blocks in the run game, and he definitely had his best game to date that I've seen him play as a Raider, and I was surprised. Now, is he going to be an above average starter in his career? No, but can he be a serviceable swing tackle that hopefully plays more left than right side? He's got a chance if he keeps developing, and I think he's added enough strength to his frame to hold up just enough against some of the bull rushes he's going to see.
The line continues to play well without Incognito, and when he comes back, long-term, just before we get to the rest of the game on Sunday, long-term, if you had to guess, because of the way the line has played, if you're the Raiders, do you – welcome him back next year, or do you think that you can save that money as far as being able to put it somewhere else?
I think you got to give the money to Denzel Good and let him play left guard for hopefully half of what Richie Incognito would come back at. Incognito's 38, 39 years old. He's getting up there, and it's interesting. I think the interior three of Good, Hudson, and Jackson might be playing the best of any interior three in the entire league. They're carrying that line right now. And against Cleveland, it was Good. He put on a show in the run game. Last week against the Chargers, Rodney Hudson looked like a Pro Bowler that he is. And then this week, Gabe Jackson probably had his best game. And I've been doing Raiders breakdowns for 3 years now. It's the best game that I've seen Gabe Jackson play in 3 years. So 3 weeks in a row, you've had all those guys look like all pro players. And And the tackles haven't been run blocking that great. Sam Young has been terrible in run blocking, to be honest. And if you can throw Trent Brown back on that line the way they're running the ball now and put Colton Miller back in there, it's scary to think what this offensive line is going to do down the stretch of the last 4 or 5 games of this season.
If he has another, let's say, 3-4 years at this level. Is Rodney Hudson going to be like a not first ballot, but maybe a second ballot Hall of Famer?
He's got a chance. I don't know if he has the hardware as far as the all pros. He has a number of Pro Bowls, but I can't think that there's probably two or three better centers in the league right now than Rodney Hudson. Just seeing what he can do in the run game and the way that he's helped guard the line of scrimmage and the way that he studies and diagnoses blitz schemes and fronts and helps get the blocking schemes going. This Raiders offensive line wouldn't be what they are without Rodney Hudson. He's the key to make everything work on offense. If they lose Rodney Hudson to an injury, I don't want to think about what's going to happen.
I look back at that playoff game versus the Texans as a measuring stick. Yeah, it's one of those things that you hope that he continues to be healthy. Now, you mentioned Trent Brown, and you mentioned Sam Young, who struggles mightily. It brings up a topic of run blocking. Is run blocking mental or physical, first and foremost? If you had to say it was more of a will thing or is it more of a mental game that you know you have to be physical at the line of scrimmage and be constantly physical?
I'll take the easy way. I'll say it's a combination of both. One, it's understanding the front that you're looking at and what your angles are and what blocks you need to make. But then you have to be physically strong enough to block the guys in front of you that are 300, 330 pounds, and then quick enough to get the smaller, speedier guys that are trying to run around you. But I think it's a combination of both. Sam Young, just for whatever reason, he's gutting it through. He's given everything he has, but it seems like every series or two he's limping to the sidelines. He gets hurt every game. But I got to give him credit for being 33 years old, and he's out there fighting and giving the Raiders everything he can. I just think this offense is going to go to another level if you can get Trent Brown in there full-time, or even if Incognito comes back and you put Good back out on the right side at right tackle.
As pessimistic as I've been as someone who follows the Raiders, if they get a healthy Trent Brown back, and if they continue this type of offensive production, I wholeheartedly think they can make a run. They can make a run with this offense. And I never thought I'd say that, but I think they can make a run with Trent Brown at right tackle. And there's something about the way this offensive line is playing. And like we mentioned before, you got to give Tom Cable his due. You got to give this man his due. He has worked miracles.
No, he has. And I think the one adjustment I saw this week is they're running a lot of that split zone where they're basically down blocking and the tight end on the strong side is working back to the backside defensive end. And you saw it over and over again, whether it was Witten, Waller, Moreau got in there. They kept doing that. But the one wrinkle they did is they had the front side tight end, usually Waller. He, instead of blocking, he would actually run out into the flat like it was an RPO, and he would pull the safety completely out of the box. And if he's the first Devontae Booker touchdown, you can see it. There's three unblocked Broncos right there, and one of them takes off with Waller. Moreau splits the other two, and Booker just walks in. And the Raiders have run the split zone all year. I've not seen the wrinkle where the tight end's pulling guys out of the box. Zay Jones did it on another one where he had two defenders run with him. And they're just moving guys out without even blocking them. And I thought that was a nice adjustment that Gruden had this week.
When we shift over to the defensive line, there were sacks. You had Matt Crosby had another one. And there was an Arden Key sighting. Like, Arden Key, maybe this is his role, you know, just flash, have a couple splash plays, and then kind of fall back in the rotation. What did you see out of David Irving that would give you a thought of he could be a good cog in the machine going down the stretch?
Irving actually didn't have a great game. You know, he didn't really have his legs under him. He hasn't played in a couple years. He played a lot. He was a little high with his pad level. He got kind of moved pretty easily in the run game. He had one pressure where he kind of got close to Locke and forced him out. But there were times where he got a little bit of interior pressure. He's 6'7". He can get his hands up and get into some throwing lanes, knock some balls down. I still think he's another week or two away from really making an impact. But he's got a chance if you can put him in there and limit his snaps, you know, 12, 15 snaps, line him up next to Maurice Hurst and try to just get a little bit of interior push with his size and length. But that was the one guy that I really wanted to hone in on when I looked at the film this morning, and he just really didn't do much.
Now, going to Carl Nassib, who actually, you know, dropped back, like you had hit on the zone blitzes. Nassib had a pick, and it's really strange to see a 6'7 or 6'6 defensive end drop back into coverage and snag one. What do you think when you saw, let me just ask you this, when you saw Gunther going to the blitz packages and seeing something relatively new, how surprised were you, and what did you see that kind of piqued your interest?
I think the big thing is he's obviously been using Abram a lot more the last 3 or 4 weeks as a fourth rusher, kind of in a simulated pressure where he's coming in either with a three down lineman or a four down lineman and someone drops out. But they kept doing it, and I was waiting for him to do it in the first half. They didn't really show it a lot in the first half because Denver had a rookie right tackle who was an undrafted free agent. I believe he's their third or fourth string guy. And I was waiting for them to just do overload blitzes and come at that guy and make that guy make decisions. They finally started doing it in the second half. And they actually did it often. So you saw Nassib drop out. He got the interception. Crosby dropped out 3 or 4 times. Farrell dropped out 2 or 3 times. And they just kept bringing it. And the interesting thing was Denver's running backs looked like they had no interest in picking up any sort of blitzes. The Raiders are bringing 4 against 3, and the running back's running routes. He's not even looking to pixel him up or block him, and Gunther just kept dialing it up, and it worked. And he brought Kwiatkowski a couple times, but his main blitz package is he was bringing Morrow and Abram, so kind of the two fastest guys they have in the middle of that defense, and he was bringing them both, and they were overloading. So Denver either didn't pick it up, they didn't have their protections right, they'd slide left, the Raiders would bring 4 from the right, and they just seemed like they had their number. But he's called those defenses this year, they just haven't really hit home. I don't know if it was they knew they could get to certain guys. The center, I believe, Cushenberry is a rookie or a second year guy at LSU. So they had a rookie, or they had some young guys on that offensive line, and the communication wasn't right. And Gunther just kept dialing it up. And it was interesting to see. I thought Nassib had a solid game. He actually was the one that forced lock up or up in the pocket that Crosby got the sack on. Crosby really didn't do much to get that sack. He was kind of just waiting there, and the guy came up, but. It was good, and back to Nassib, I'll give him credit. He has more career interceptions than Nevin Lawson now, and Lawson actually had a good game too. He had a nice bounce-back game, but Nassib now has more in the interception column in his career.
That means we are all tied with Nevin Lawson. Like, so, hey, if the Raiders ever call you to, you know, kind of jump back there at safety, you might actually have a chance if the ball's in the air now. But for as long as I can remember, the Raiders have had – poor linebacker play. Nick Kwiatkowski just keeps making plays. If we even take the one-handed pick, which was late in the game, aside, he actually played fairly well in coverage again. No one's expecting this man to be Fred Warner. He's not that type. He doesn't have the athletic trait or the athletic profile, but what he does is he realizes he trusts what he sees and he makes decisions accordingly. What did you see Kwiatkowski that surprised you?
Just the overall ability to diagnose and zone coverage, because the Raiders ran a lot of zone coverage this week, and he always seemed to be in the right place. He knew what route concepts were coming at him. He was knocking balls away. He made the one-handed interception. Now, I don't think Kwiatkowski is going to hold up in man coverage against tight ends or running backs for the most part. If it's down the field, anything that's more than 5-6 yards downfield, man coverage is not his strength. But in his zone coverage where he's just covering the middle of the field and reading in front of him and reacting, he was really good. And it's kind of interesting because Corey Littleton is the opposite. He's the guy that needs to be in man coverage, and he's not really good in zone coverage and diagnosing. So maybe – I don't know if it was better to have Morrow with Kwiatkowski because they played a lot of zone and they brought all these zone fires and these fire zone pressures. Maybe that's why the defense played well, but for some reason, Kwiatkowski and Littleton don't really mesh well coverage-wise defensively when they're on the field together. So it's something that the Raiders are going to have to think about going forward, and what role are they going to use Corey Littleton in, and do they want to take Nick Morrow off the field and play Littleton with Kwiatkowski based on the different defenses they're going to run in a specific week. I'm very curious to see how they move forward with that.
I'm just hoping they don't let, or I'll just rephrase that, I hope that this doesn't force Paul Gunther's hand to look at Corey Littleton's contract and be forced to, or feel obliged to play him in certain situations where he knows that Corey Littleton can't perhaps sniff it out as quickly as Kwiatkowski. Speaking of Kwiatkowski, and I asked you this question when it came to run blocking. Now I'm going to ask you a question when it comes to playing linebacker. Why do you think so many athletic linebackers fail and a fair amount of the heady or the ones who trust their eyes more than their legs succeed?
A lot of it's mental. You have to understand the blocking schemes that are in front of you in the run game and not take the cheese on any sort of play actions or misdirections. A lot of it is being physical enough to know your leverage and what your run fits are. Those quicker, smaller, athletic sideline-to-sideline guys don't want to go against offensive linemen. You got those guys have to be covered up and just let them roam. But the linebackers that understand where their roles and where their run fits are, what leverage, inside shoulder, outside shoulder, where their help's coming from, that understand how to play team defense are very valuable. I think of, you know, maybe like a Zach Thomas or a guy like that, someone in the middle that physically doesn't blow you away, but the guy's a great linebacker. And I think Kwiatkowski has a lot of those traits. I don't think I'm not saying he's Zach Thomas, but he's smart. He understands where he's supposed to be. There was a nice run play that the play that Crosby got in the backfield for a 4-yard loss. He was actually doing a gap exchange with Kwiatkowski, and Crosby was lined up, basically head up on the tight end in the C gap, worked all the way back across, jumped in the B gap. Kwiatkowski scraped over the top, and he was there if Crosby didn't make the play, but he understands where he's supposed to be. And that's the biggest thing, mentally understanding everything that's going on the field, everything the offensive line's doing to try to get you to move. And he's just not doing it. He's being very fundamentally sound right now.
A London Fletcher type, a guy that, you know,
yeah.
He may not have all the physical attributes, but always there, always makes the play. Speaking of someone in the right place at the right time, when I saw Jeff Heath in the two picks, the first thing I thought was, oh, Lord, he's going to have an Eric Harris type of fandom who are going to trumpet him for being an all-pro this year, even though he, you know, two picks. With Heath's picks, do you think this is just a case of Drew Lock just being Drew Lock and just throwing up whatever he sees, or a combination of the pressure got to him, or Heath just could read the young quarterback and kind of anticipate it?
Well, the first one was just an overthrow, and he had the deep half, and the ball came right to him, so he didn't really have to do much on the first one. On the second one, in the red zone, it was just him being smart, understanding that there was no other receiver on that side of the field to challenge him vertically. He had the end zone and the back line as kind of an extra defender. He just didn't give any ground, and he read the route from Jerry Jeudy. As soon as he saw that was going to be a slant, he jumped it and Lock threw it right to him. With 6 seconds left in the half, a veteran quarterback's not making that throw. He's probably dumping it off or just throwing it out of the back of the end zone, and they kind of took advantage of Drew Lock right there. I think Heath can just be, you know, kind of a safety and get you through this season, make just enough plays, be in the right spots, and help you out. He's not going to blow a ton of coverages or just miss tackles, kind of like we've seen from Eric Harris. But there's more snaps hopefully coming his way. And you actually saw a little bit. Isaiah Johnson, I think he had 8 or 9 snaps, was mostly at safety this week, which we hadn't seen much this year. So that was kind of interesting to see him get some snaps at safety.
I'm kind of intrigued with Isaiah Johnson at safety because he has the frame to be a safety, but he has the speed to be a corner, which is that kind of a hybrid, and that will allow, I want to see what that range is like, but it would be an interesting fit down the stretch. Now, between KJ Hamler and Jerry Jeudy, Drew Lock targeted them 18 times. And neither one of them, one had 68 yards, one had 50. So pretty much 118 yards on 18 targets. And the Raiders' secondary actually held up again. And it is much maligned. Where do you see somebody like Trayvon Mullen? He may not be a lockdown corner just yet, but do you see enough of a sample size where he will eventually profile as that?
Yeah, I think he has everything you're looking for to be a number one corner. He's not there yet. Over the last 3 weeks, this was probably the worst of the three games he had as far as just in coverage. But, you know, it's there. He's physical. He can help in run support. He's good in zone coverage. He's pretty good in cover two. He's good in cover three. And he's showing you some man coverage. Now, he's not going to stay with the smaller, shiftier guys, the Tyreek Hills. Jerry Jeudy gave him a couple of fits, especially in that third and 15 that he gave up. But, no, Mullen has a chance to be a good corner and be a Raider for a long time and be a cornerstone on this defense. He's one of the three or four building blocks they have. If you had to take a guy, I'd say him, Abram, Crosby, Kwiatkowski, hopefully Arnett. You kind of build around those guys.
Now, when we come back from break, I want to kind of give a quick overview of the upcoming game versus the Chiefs, which I think might be for the division. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Aaron Spiggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, when the Chiefs roll into Vegas and they added Le'Veon Bell, but to this point, he really, I mean, pretty much 20 touches in three games, which is not a fantastic amount, but do you think he will be the X factor?
I don't know if he'll be the X factor. I think he'll play a part in this game because when the Raiders played them last time, they were playing coverages to take away the deep shots, and they were daring Mahomes to check it down. He just didn't do it. And I think if Mahomes adjusts and does check down, that Le'Veon Bell could be an option to give the Raiders fits underneath. I think that they're going to have to change their coverages up and kind of plan to take away a couple of those shorter passes and just – hopefully not get beat over the top on certain downs when they do that, and then take away some deep shots on third and long. Hopefully they can get pressure like they did last time and get the Chiefs into some third and longs, and hopefully the Chiefs abandon the running game like they did last time. Because if the Chiefs are in third and three, third and four, third and five, it's going to be very tough to stop them.
It's strange. Like, this Chiefs team, even though they're 8-1 and they are the defending Super Bowl champions, is it me or is the just that same Chiefs aura isn't there right now? They feel beatable.
They definitely do. I watched the game against Carolina, and I was surprised Carolina held on and had a chance to kick a field goal to win it, albeit a long field goal. But they had the ball with a minute and a half left and needed a field goal to beat the Chiefs. And I just think there's something missing that was on that team last year. And I think it's on the defensive side of the ball where you can take advantage of him. I don't think Frank Clark's having the kind of year he had to get last year. And Chris Jones, while he's a monster on the inside, I don't think he's having the kind of year he had last year. So if they're not getting the pressure on the quarterback, they're having trouble holding up on the back end, which we saw the Raiders take advantage of. But I think he can run the ball on them too. They got some young linebackers that are okay, but if the Raiders – there's multiple ways they can attack this team. If they want to line up and pound it, they can do that. If they want to throw it down the field, they can do that. If they want to work horizontally, they can do that. If they want to run 13 personnel, like, Gruden's offense is so diverse, and the running scheme, you don't know what they're going to bring. One week, like we mentioned, it's crack toss. One week it's split zone. One week it's inside zone. Then it's outside zone. Then it's pin and pull. Then it's power. Then it's gap. So you don't really know what the Raiders are going to bring in the run game. But they can run it several different ways.
I look at their secondary as being a kind of a hindrance. I know that Tyrann Mathieu is there. He's having a decent year, but when I look at Sorensen and Tre'Davious Ward, I mean, between them, just 11 missed tackles, and just Ward, opponents are completing 66% of their passes. He's already given up 3 touchdowns. He's been kind of, for lack of a better term, torched at times. Where Sorensen is just kind of a little bit of the same, where 77% of his passes aim at him get completed, where, like you mentioned, Frank Clark doesn't seem like he's the Frank Clark of last year. I don't think it's out of the realm for the Raiders to win this game.
No, I think it is a winnable game, and I think if they run the ball the way they've run it the last 3 weeks, and then they're able to get some shots down the field and complete those, they're going to have a chance to put up 35, 40 points again on this team. And the weakness of the Chiefs' defense is those outside corners and the slot corners. The receivers for the Raiders are going to be open this week. It's just a matter of time. Can they pass protection hold up to give Carr time to take those shots down the field? Sorensen, he can get beat by the tight end. He's not going to be able to stay with Waller. And then he's not going to be able to run with Ruggs. He's not going to run with Aguilar in the deep half or in cover three or on deep crossing routes. So if the Raiders' offensive line can hold up in pass protection with the way they can run the ball, they can go up and down the field on the Chiefs' defense.
We actually live in a world where I just thought to myself that the Raiders could sweep the Chiefs. It is a strange time.
It's possible, and if they do, and then those games down the stretch are going to be even more important when they play Indianapolis and Miami. If they're within striking distance in the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season to get to the Chiefs and win the division, that's the difference between getting a home game in the first round, if they win the division as a number 3 or number 4 seed, or having to go on the road and play at Kansas City or at Pittsburgh or at Buffalo. That's a huge difference when we come to January, if they can win this game this week.
The schedule broke perfectly for the Raiders as far as this was the confidence game. This was these are the confidence games where the games preceding the Chiefs game on Sunday were the confidence builders, even though getting over the hump in Kansas City was a monumental hurdle that they somehow navigated and held on to win, which it's a win. These wins here showed the kind of team that I kind of like to see where, yes, the game against the first game against the Chiefs was great as far as, yeah, they put up a bunch of numbers, put up a bunch of points, but the games like the last couple they've showed, the one against Cleveland and this one, these are the dirty, punch you in the mouth, just physical, ugly late-season games that define character. We've seen teams in the past with this Raider team lose 1, 2, even 3 of these games. They won what they had to win. They win the games they have to win. How do you fight looking at the schedule and saying, you know what, they can win this one, they can win this one, they can win this one, like fighting the overconfidence?
I think that's what us fans do. We look down and we see Atlanta win, Jets win, and we just go down the schedule and we do that. I don't think this team or Gruden are looking by anybody. They could easily look past Denver looking forward to this rematch, and they didn't. They went out there and won 37-12, and quite frankly, that game could have been 55-12. They left 3 or 4 touchdowns on the field, the punt return, the drops, Ruggs, Aguilar, Waller, those all could have been touchdowns. And I think this is a mentally strong team, which is weird to say as a Raiders fan now in my early 40s. I haven't seen a lot of teams in my years as a fandom that have been mentally strong. But I think there's something about this team where they know if they just go out and execute, they can beat anybody. And they've shown that. And these games, the last 20 years, they would have lost to Cleveland in the weather. They would have lost to the Chargers. They would have found a way to let Denver hang around in that game and not pull away there in the end of the third quarter. And 3 or 4 years ago, that game's not 37-12. That game's 18-15 or something like that. But they're finding ways every week to win. And like you mentioned earlier, Derek Carr hasn't thrown for more than 160, 170 yards in each of the last three games. So I just think there's something about this team. They impose their will on the opponent. They're physical on the offensive line. And the good thing is you're starting to see the physicality on the defense. And I think when John Abram got back in the lineup after missing the Tampa Bay game, you've kind of seen that. And now you're seeing guys fly around. You're seeing four or five guys running to the ball and making tackles, where early in the season it was one, maybe two. You're still seeing missed tackles, some bad angles, but the effort on defense is going up every week, and I think that's the leadership that you see John Abraham bringing to that defense, and the Nick Kwiatkowski being back on that defense after missing a couple of games with injury. And you're starting to see some leaders on that side of the ball that they haven't had since Khalil Mack was there.
To me, Abram and Kwiatkowski are pretty much the heart and soul of that defense. When it plays well, they're right in the middle of the action. Now, before we get out of it, can you tell people where they can interact with you on social media and see the All-22s and the clips that you provide, which stand to reason are among the best that we see?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's RHOLM22. I put the weekly clips up every week. If you guys want to send me questions, you can do that. Every couple of weeks, I try to do a question and answer session during Thursday Night Football where you guys can send me questions during the game. Ready to relate, and I'll answer them. But, yeah, I'd love to interact with some people, and they can jump on and follow the video tweets as well.
He is one of the brightest people we have in the nation, Ryan Holmes. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight on this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.